very good because they wanted they didn't take time because it's blocked by magnitude of the FDA. Is in the process, I can mention, concluding an agreement of association with the European Union, which will have far-reaching implications for trade between Mercosur and the EU at the recent summit of the in certain areas as regards our traditional markets, particularly as regards seasonal agricultural exports and other commodities. There's a complementarity of economies as well, which we could further explore. Mercosur countries are moreover very strong allies in the context of the South, particularly as regards the necessity for the review of the UN and other international financial architecture and international trade regime. The members of the Mercosur organization are significant in both bilateral and multilateral terms. As a group, I mentioned the size. Mercosur as a trade bloc, the four full members plus Venezuela, comprises the third largest geo-economic zone in the world. It is estimated that 12% of the industrial product of developing countries come from Mercosur. Furthermore, the economic bloc Mercosur has 28% of all soya oil production in the world, 4% of automobile production, 10% of raw steel, and so one can go on. The four full members also have 14.5% of the world's forests, 26% of livestock reserves, 7% of maize production. So Mercosur as a territory extends over 12 million square meters, approximately two-thirds of South America, an area larger than China. It's a growing importance. South Africa's total trade with Mercosur currently totals about, I'd say, 20 billion rand approximately. Now, if one takes the fact that you have countries like Brazil and Argentina in there, our total trade with Italy, for instance, amounts to 18, 19 billion rand per annum. So, as a combined figure, we have a total trade similar to that that we have with Italy, which really reflects that there is huge opportunity for us as a country and a continent to expand our economic ties with Mercosur. Now, what are we doing about that? I can just say that increasingly, of course, having after 94, having realized and the political and economic importance of Latin America and, of course, Mercosur, President Mandela attended the Mercosur summit in 2000. That was in 1998. It attended and from there on, we showed a strong interest in expanding our ties with Mercosur. Not long after that, that was in December 2000, Minister Alex Irwin at the time, so with DTI, signed a declaration of intent towards a free trade agreement with Mercosur, thus commencing the process of establishing a formal agreement with Mercosur. In keeping with our approach to our region, we decided that this would not be South Africa and Mercosur, but that obviously we would have to look at a SAPU Mercosur, a trade dispensation or a trade arrangement. We have had several rounds of negotiations with Mercosur on the economic treaty or trade treaty between us, and it was agreed as a step towards eventual free trade agreement that we should negotiate a preferential trade agreement. And I'm happy to say that that since we signed this PTA, the initial PTA in December 2004, we had to flesh out this PTA and add a lot of detail to this preferential trade agreement. And I was told this morning that we had discussions yesterday, which concluded yesterday, where there was actually a breakthrough was achieved between DTI and Mercosur on finalizing the outstanding issues on this preferential trade agreement, as I said, as a step towards an eventual free trade agreement between South Africa and Mercosur. We managed to solve some of the outstanding issues, amongst others, dealing with rules of origin, customs cooperation, sanitary measures, and so forth. And also, obviously, additional access for markets for products, or access to the markets for products from our smaller member states within SAPU to Mercosur. But a breakthrough was achieved yesterday, and I believe that we have been told that that this PTA or Provincial Free Trade Agreement will be able to be signed probably by December. So that I'll come back later to, I think, some of the steps that we need to take in terms of South Africa in further exploring and exploiting the market in South America, given the fact that there's a huge trade imbalance. Just something about Mercosur internally. There were a number of inherent discrepancies and imbalances regarding the scale of economies that continue to bedevil Mercosur's functioning. There are smaller economies within Mercosur, like Uruguay and Paraguay, arguing that they are disadvantaged by the larger members of Argentina and Brazil. This has inevitably led to tensions with political traders of Uruguay mounting for a rethink on the benefits of the country's membership. And certain groups in Uruguay see a bilateral free trade agreement with the U.S. As I said, after the U.S. did not succeed to bring about this free trade agreement of the Americas, they now are increasingly entering into bilateral arrangements with individual countries within South America, which obviously causes tensions within Mercosur, as I said. Uruguay may also make new proposals regarding the current SAPU-Mercosur negotiations, the exact nature of which remains to be established. Let us just look at some of the our relations with some of the key countries I said that we have good relations with Argentina and Brazil. As mentioned earlier, without seeking to perpetuate the divide between the larger and less dominant communes with Mercosur, it's important that we look at our relations with these two countries. As far as Argentina is concerned, you'll be aware of the economic difficulties which beset Argentina a few years ago and of course led to a certain degree of political instability. But President Néstor Kirchner became the president in 2003. He has really turned the economy of Argentina around, paid off Argentina's huge foreign debt, and right now the economy of Argentina is growing at about 7% per annum, once again providing a lot of opportunities for us as South Africa. Just as a matter of interest, we are leaving office very soon, and the spouse, Cristina Kirchner, as she was a senator for Buenos Aires, now seems to be solidly ahead to win the presidency and following in the footsteps of her spouse. As I say, there's a very healthy trend in terms of their economic development. In order to give structure to our bilateral relations, Minister Dlamini Zuma and her Argentinian counterpart signed an agreement last year to create a binational commission between South Africa and Argentina. It is a very constructive development. We've had the first session, as I said, fairly recently, and we had a wide number of line function departments and agencies that were interested in expanding cooperation with Argentina. We signed about 11 bilateral agreements in a number of areas of cooperation, and so our relations with Argentina are really moving in the right direction. Once again, in terms of trade, our trade, total trade with Argentina amounts to about 7 billion rand per annum total trade, that is heavily skewed in Argentina's favor, almost 5-1. But I must say that not only with Argentina, but the rest of the continent, we've been working very closely, and I recall that we discussed this on the previous occasion in the context of the portfolio committee. What do we need to do to address the situation, to redress or address this imbalance in our trade? And we've been working very closely with the DTI to determine through the commissioning of trade surveys to find out where are the niches for our companies. We've also recently had a trade delegation, a business delegation to Argentina to further explore investment and particularly trade opportunities. We need to expand our exports to Argentina because the opportunities are there. It's simply that the markets are complex, it's not known to us, there's a language issue. But we are indeed working on familiarizing us with those markets and moving in there. As regards our political relations with Argentina, also in the multilateral sphere, we share similar policies and objectives. We support both countries, support the development agenda of the South, and accept the centrality of the UN system and multilateralism generally. So there's a lot of like-mindedness between us and Argentina. The next country, as I said, is Brazil, a key player for us. We have excellent relations with Brazil, with an excellent rapport between President Lula da Silva and President Becky. And his term of office, he's now in his second and last term of office, with a huge majority controlling about 70% of the seats in the Brazilian parliament. And we've been working very closely with Brazil, not only in terms of political consultations on multilateral issues, but also our trade with Brazil is rapidly expanding. Once again, skewed, but that now amounts to about 12 billion. I mentioned 7 billion for Argentina. For Brazil, it's 12 billion per annum. Has been growing at the rate of about 5-10% on average over the last number of years. So our relations with Brazil are good. We also, as you're aware, work with Brazil in the context of IPSA. We've entered into some exciting agreements with them on biofuels. As you know, that they have a lot of sugar, and they're focusing very heavily on biofuels. And that's just one of many areas that we are working with them. We also have a binational commission with them, which the next session of which will take place early next year, where we will endeavor to focus heavily on economic guides and expanding our trade relations with them, particularly in, as I say, biofuels, automotive, and in the mining sectors. We have also, as I say, apart from Brazil and Argentina, I mentioned the fact that Venezuela is de facto a already a new member of Mercosur, and that we also have growing relations with Venezuela under President Chavez. And we are expecting a visit of President Chavez here in the first half of next year. He was supposed to have come here about 2 months ago, and there was some problems. And he didn't. The visit was postponed. Gigi and Saluba recently, about 4 weeks ago, took a very strong team consisting of DTI and Mineral and Energy Affairs to Venezuela to identify projects for cooperation in the field of mining, geology, petroleum, gas, and also to see what we can do in the field of trade. So, as a new member of Mercosur, we already have, as I say, good and growing relations with Venezuela. Also, I mentioned Bolivia is seriously interested in looking at Mercosur. With Bolivia, we have good relations, equally or as Venezuela. We expect a visit by President Morales to South Africa also next year, incoming visits. And we have been working, you'll recall that shortly after his election, he came to South Africa at the invitation of an NGO, did meet with the president at the time. But subsequently, their deputy president was here, and we've been working also with the help of Minister Esau Fahad, with Minister Johnny De Lange, in helping Bolivia with constitution building in restructuring their government, and also we've been looking at what we can do in terms of business opportunities. We are a like-minded country with Venezuela and with Bolivia in the sense that not only President Chavez but President Morales are very much committed in refounding of their state, naturalization of natural resources, there's agrarian reforms, and of course the broader inclusion of the previous marginalized communities, particularly in the case of Bolivia. You were aware that President Morales is the first indigenous president of Bolivia in 180 years of the history of that country. So there's a lot of like-mindedness between Bolivia and Venezuela and South Africa, and as I say, in the context of Mercosur and the future of our relations with Mercosur, that all goes well. Say, in conclusion, as far as Mercosur is concerned, that we have to then report that our relationship with Mercosur as an organization and with its individual member countries are all very good. And it's based on shared values and commitments, common goals and experiences, and also in the context of the partnership the context of South-South cooperation. But as I mentioned, a lot of challenges remain in terms of addressing existing trade imbalances. And I trust that if, as a first step, the conclusion of this PTA that we now have the breakthrough, that will help to further open up markets, and that will further enhance our economic ties, in particular given the imbalances. The political relations, I said, are by and large good. And we need to build on that further. I could just like to assure you that as the DFA and also in close cooperation with the DTI, we will, after the, we already looked at it, but now with the breakthrough on the PTA, we need to do further work to see what we can do to take forward our relationship with Mercosur. So that is what I'd like to say on Mercosur, Chair. Perhaps I can go on and just... I don't know if you want me to perhaps stop here, or that I perhaps go through with just touching on some of the recent political developments in Latin America and then take questions afterwards, or would you like to stop here?
Okay.
Okay. Now, as I said, as developments in Mercosur are obviously very much affected and informed by the developments in the rest of Latin America, and let me just say something about these issues. Themes I'd briefly like to cover are political and economic considerations, issues relating to regional integration. As I said, there are a lot of problems in Latin America in terms of political and economic integration, a lot of forces moving in various directions. Let's look at the external role players. Who are the people that have the influence, and what are their intentions in terms of Latin America? And perhaps then draw some conclusions for South Africa. In the recent past, and you're all aware of that, there has been a determinable trend in South America in terms of the political landscape. The trend has been characterized by the rise in election victories of left-leaning leaders and constituency governments, and the election of leaders such as Chavez, Gonzalez of Venezuela, of course, President Lula of Brazil, was hailed as a signal for a new Latin American political direction. The election of people like Chavez and Lula has said to have inspired fairly recent elections of, as I mentioned, the first indigenous leader, labor leader, Morales, and in Bolivia. There's also in Chile, President Michelle Bachelet in Chile in 2006. President Vasquez of Uruguay, and of course, fairly recently, Daniel Ortega, the Sandinista in Nicaragua, where we have seen this move towards electing a government in on the continent. The rise of and we looked at this closely and looking at the rise of these governments, the ones I mentioned, there were basically six drivers that led to this development. The first one was the failure of military and subsequent governments to deliver on socio-economic policies. You know that very much aware of the history of South America in that regard, in places like Chile and Argentina. They were oppressive. The second is oppressive and corrupt governments. Third one is continued poverty, inequality, and social exclusion of the majority and indigenous people. There is a wave of state democratization that's dissatisfaction with implementation of neoliberal economic policies. And of course, then the U.S. role on the continent over the last number of decades to the so-called Monroe Doctrine. All these issues, it was like a reaction to these developments that led to this new wave, if you will, of left-leaning governments. Democratization. In Latin America, in many of these countries, have actually acted as a catalyst and led to improved emphasis to move towards more democracy and more transparency on the continent. Many Latin American countries are subsequently also in a phase of repositioning their international relations. In the past, there was a very strong interference but a role for the U.S. So that a lot of these countries, and I'll come back to the interaction between Latin America and India and China later, but there is a repositioning on the part, and this is one of the positive outcomes of the of this development. The phenomenon of emergence of left-leaning governments is not actually a new phenomenon. We know that in the 19th century, already Simon Bolivar started the idea of a union of Latin American countries, and it is also located to a large degree in the anti-colonial struggle against the Spanish and Portuguese domination, and of course, as I said, U.S. hegemony that we saw. So it's a reaction to that that we have seen on the continent. There, in looking at these governments, as I say, they are not intrinsically a homogeneous group. There are basically two categories that we identified, and the first category consists of leaders and movements that originated from a socialist ideology background. The leaders in this category understand the constraints that globalization and poverty impose on domestic policies, and they emphasize social policies that include education, anti-poverty programs, health, housing, amongst others. On the one hand, there is it's a strange setup actually, but on the one hand, there is a very strong disagreement with the U.S. on some issues, but on the other hand, there are still some of these countries who have problems in loosening the grip that the U.S. has on them. As I said, there is a phase now of countries in Latin America repositioning themselves and trying to free them from the dependency that they were and the influence of the U.S. over the years. The second category is generally considered nationalistic and populist in orientation. It prioritizes the importance of national sovereignty and government involvement in controlling state resources, and also emphasizes inclusive democratic governance and equitable land distribution. And its leaders are distinguished to a certain extent by a lot of actions or rhetoric against the U.S. In this case, you are familiar with the position that both Fred Morales and President Chavez have taken. They would fall in the second category. The first category I mentioned there, you would probably have countries like Brazil, Argentina, Chile, Uruguay, Panama, and Peru falling in that category. I mentioned the fact that regional integration is probably one of the greatest challenges facing in Latin America, and that despite many attempts for regional integration, they still have not made great strides. Brazil, for one, is one of the leading countries in the region in terms of trying to take forward integration of Latin American economies. At the time when the Free Trade Area of the Americas, the FTTA, was launched, Brazil at that time was in favor of that, despite the fact that most of the other Mercosur countries were against that. But there have been, over the past few years, countries in the region have actively worked and trying to reduce their economic and trade dependence from the U.S. and the European Union, and looking for opportunities, as I say, in non-traditional emerging markets, countries of the South. Brazil's diplomatic achievements include the successful completion of substantive agreements with developing countries such as China, India, and South Africa. Brazil also, under President Lula, has increasingly developed contacts on the African continent, and I can come back to that later. However, Mercosur faces intense challenges with regards to basic core agreements on how to move the integration process forward. President Lula and his Venezuelan counterpart are ardent supporters, as I mentioned early on, in the creation of the South African Community of Nations. Is basically to bring the Andean Community of Nations and Mercosur together. As I mentioned, this is probably going to take time, and that is something that we increasingly will have to monitor and see what the implications are going to be for the continent. Apart from Mercosur and the Andean Community of Nations, and then of course the South American Community of Nations, there's also another economic community called the Bolivarian Alternative for the Americas, ALBA, which was launched in 2001 by President Chavez. However, there are some within as far as the tensions on the continent, there are leaders in the region who consider President Chavez as a threat to cooperation grounded on nationalist and sovereignty ideas, which create instability and manufactures enemies who could eventually remove him from power. This is what the thinking is in some of the countries on the continent. And despite the desire to pursue a much more socialist approach, the emerging left-leaning South American governments, many of them still stick to a mix of free market economy or economic policies with a very strong trade-off dimension. Notwithstanding the different approach with integration, it has been agreed that there is a possibility for convergence between the four regional formations. On one hand, the developmentalist trend led by Brazil and Argentina, and the Bolivarian trend led by Venezuela. This all just reflects the problems and the tensions and the problems that Latin America has had in integrating politically and economically. Just perhaps to look at some of the external role players in the region. In the first instance, we could be saying that except the US and the EU, I already mentioned that the United States continues to take a great interest in what is happening on the Latin American continent. You're all aware of the ongoing psychological warfare, if you will, between the US and for instance, President Chavez. But the U.S. is like the EU, very much interested in expanding its economic presence on the continent. For one, I think one of the most important reasons is the fact that Latin America remains one of the important suppliers of crude oil to the U.S. So there's a strategic interest for them to continue to expand their ties. Similarly with the EU has, as you're aware, through Spanish and Portuguese colonial history, they share historical ties, and particularly countries like Spain have a very strong presence on the continent, once again looking at economic opportunities and also at natural resources. But outside the US and the EU, it is very evident that China is pursuing a far more robust policy towards Latin America. China's interests in the region appear, obviously, to gain greater access to natural resources, to increase trade investment in these countries, and other objectives, of course, include strengthening and consolidating relations with countries that still have ties with Taiwan. And there are quite a few of them in South America, Costa Rica, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, amongst other countries that maintain official ties with Taiwan. This could, of course, with increasing interaction between China with Latin America, leading to positive change in the years to come. Increasingly, also, Latin America countries are looking towards India as another major trading partner in Asia. As I mentioned, there's a repositioning of international relations that happened on the continent, in particular over the last 10 years. The ties between India and South America remain incipient and loose in terms of cooperation tools when compared for those maintained with the EU and US. I mentioned the proposed economic ties, and also the fact that they are moving into a formal economic arrangement with the EU. So India is increasingly expanding its influence on the continent. Just to go to Africa. The role of the interaction between Africa and South America is perhaps not as expanded as one would like to see that. A number of African countries such as South Africa, Kenya, and Nigeria, and most of the countries from North Africa have a presence in the region. Some countries in Latin America have diplomatic representation in Africa, but I think if one looks by and large that there is still a lot of room for improvement in terms of political and economic ties between South America and Africa. Obviously there is a link, particularly countries like Brazil and Colombia, where you have a large number of Africa diaspora, which obviously provides opportunities for closer ties and cooperation. But the bottom line is that the interaction is still not what we would like to see. A positive development is that last year in November, and this was the third so-called Africa South America Summit. It was called CASA. It was held in Abuja on 31st of November last year, where it was the first continent-to-continent interaction. Not extremely well attended by heads of state from Latin America. It was actually a brainchild of President Lula, and we hope that we will be able to build on this process. The next Venezuela has offered to host the next Africa South America Summit. There will be a ministerial in Morocco. In the meantime, the proposal is that CASA, which is Africa South America Summit, South America Summit, will meet every 2 years, and in between years there will be a ministerial. But the idea is basically to expand, to improve the relations between Africa and South America, also in the South-South context, and to look at economic ties. So that is a encouraging development in terms of the relations between the two. Just by way of trying to sum up and then a conclusion on what has happened on the continent is that this left-wing move, if you will, in South America is not a new phenomenon. As I mentioned, it goes way back to Simón Bolívar. But however, what has happened over the last 3, 4, 5 years there has opened up new dimensions, new perspectives for not only South Africa's relations with the continent, and also, as I mentioned, it has had a significant impact on repositioning of Latin American countries in terms of their foreign policy. One often wonders how sustainable this trend will be. Obviously, the sustainability of these developments will depend on two variables. The one would be obviously the domestic agenda of these governments in these countries. In Italia, to what extent they can effectively deliver to its populace who have supported them. And then also their interaction with the prevailing international dynamics. This will all lead to the sustainability of this move towards the left. The emergence of these progressive governments in Latin America, as I said, signals the possibility, a strong possibility of a shift in the global configuration of power in favor of the South, which would reinforce and sustain this trend in view of the fact that there would be much closer cooperation with a wider range of countries. And as I mentioned, the region has attracted key players now of the South, China, India, and of course also South Africa's increasing expansion of its size with the area. It has also brought about the opportunity, this phenomenon has brought about the opportunity to boost the advancement of a common approach and of the advancement of common issues regarding South-South cooperation in multilateral fora. And as I say, because of the fact that there's a strong like-mindedness on issues like inclusive society, gender issues and so on, which is, as I say, creates increasing opportunities for us, not only on the bilateral level, but also in a broader African and a multilateral global context. We must, as South Africa, in conclusion, just to say, we must, as South Africa, and it is our priority, it is one of our major objectives to actively expand and promote our ties with not only Mercosur, which I was talking about, but with Latin America. We have on bilateral level with most countries, we have good relations. We have a number of bilateral mechanisms. I mentioned the BNCs with Brazil and Argentina, for instance, that we have to utilize to leverage South Africa's position in those countries, particularly in terms of our economic ties, because of the skewed nature they are. We also need to, in terms of Africa, we need to get these countries more involved and more engaged on the continent. And that's why, as I said, this recent South America summit was a good start and something that we need to build on. And then, of course, wider in a global context, the fact that there is a much larger degree of like-mindedness now with many countries on the continent, South American continent, it opens up a lot of opportunities for us to enhance our multilateral cooperation with Latin America, which we're already doing, for instance, in the context of ICSA and so on. But the bottom line is that there remains a lot of work to be done, and we are currently having a new look, and I hope that we will have another opportunity to brief you months' time to look at an active strategy with the DTI on promoting our economic relations. And as I said, we are doing studies in some of these countries to determine the niche markets and to open up those markets for us, for South African exporters. As I say, the breakthrough yesterday in Ghana regarding the America's two provincial trade agreement is a step in the right direction, and I hope that in the next couple of months we'll be able to put a comprehensive strategy on the table for you on our relations and the promotion of relations, which is a very important part of the world. Thank you.
Thank you very much,
Dr. Paul,
for your really interesting briefing on Latin America and it's already just past 4:12. I'm going to allow for 5 questions only, and the person will have only one question. Please don't make it 2 or 3, it's only why you don't have time. You still have to do some other work of the editorial committee before we break for lunch. So 5 questions, I see Mr. Kibande's hand up. Sofana. Well, I have a question. We have 3 names so far. This is the chance, otherwise it's possible. Two, three.
Okay, please,
make it short, please.
Thank you. mine and our family to raise a concern about our relationship in terms of change, because we are making a mistake. They were counted to contribute to the Latin America. Because my concern is that why some of the countries during our fighting, they contributed to us, like in the day of the future to the country. But now, I mean, the document decided about our relationship in terms of trade. Because of the blockade of believing that the blockade itself, another contributing factor, is because of the harm which they played for us to be liberated. But now we are there to focus on them.
Thank you,
Madam Chair. Lord, mine is a very practical question. I heard earlier on you said there will be a meeting of IPSA next week.
Yeah, we'll come to that
afternoon. Yeah, no, my question is simply related to it. Because the ambassador said that we should encourage the involvement of these Latin American countries in Africa. I simply want to know that in this meeting, for coming meeting of IPSA, are African countries been invited and they've been invited? In the light of what you said.
My point is on the issue of the second category. April this year we were in Venezuela, there was a conference for women in Venezuela, and we are dressed by President Chavez. And listening to him and read his institutional police state resources, I mean the controlling of the state resources, and the controlling of the resources by the state, and listening clearly to him when he talked about the oil, we did not clearly get the plan on how he's going to do this. Is there a clear plan or a plan that could be successful on nationalizing all these resources that he's proposing that they should be that they should be nationalized?
Our question is another concern. We have the skilled trade relations at Tampus with Brotherhood. Now, the question arises we are trying to build a strong public economic integration and economic block. Now, what kind of how is that going to impact? Already we are seeing problems of SACU and SADC, and now we have SACU and Locosis, and essentially for the African agenda, the strengthening of SADC or the regional economic entity is vital. How are we going to manage this process?
Yes, that's a lot of questions. And regarding all the questions, I'd like to get to. Is it possible for you to say to us, what are the impediments that can be made against regional integration on the one hand and on the other, or continental? What is the, in that context, the asymmetry, economic asymmetry, cultural asymmetry in the region? Mitigate again, because we are facing influences on the African continent, the African Union, and the Eastern Bloc.
Thank you very much. Thanks. As regards the question regarding the Cuba, I think initially that I actually in this
document the presentation focused mainly on, say, South America, although South America would include Cuba. I also didn't deal with the Caribbean today. But I can just say that for us, Cuba is a key country based on reasons that you know much better than I. There are very strong solidarity ties, very strong political ties, links. And if I just see the resources that we spend on Cuba in terms of the department's budget, it reflects the importance of Cuba. We have a regular flow of visitors, delegations. We recently participated in a major trade event with Mr. Rob Davis, who is a huge trade delegation to Cuba. So Cuba, as is the case for the rest of Latin America, is an increasing priority for us. I mean, Cuba is there and we've been working very closely with them. We have twice a year, we have consultations with them, we have a BNP, so Cuba is right up there in terms of our relations. Our trade with Cuba is growing. I don't have a figure offhand now, but I know there is a So Cuba is really a priority for us. So, but the same applies to the Caribbean and to Latin America. We are, for next year, for instance, planning a number of visits, not only by my minister, but also by the president to Latin America and to some of the Caribbean countries to promote not only bilateral ties, but that's South South cooperation. We just had very close interaction with the Caribbean on the diaspora. We had one of the regional diaspora conferences based in Barbados. We're looking at, for instance, towards Latin America. One of the issues that often comes up is in terms of our trade ties is the lack of savings. Now, the only way you can fly now to Argentina is that there is an Air Malaysia flight that stops you in Cape Town and you go on to Argentina. There is an SAA flight in Sao Paulo, but you really need to look at expanding our air links. And also, the minister feels very strongly with the Caribbean. We really need to look at that. SAA, of course, at the moment is going through kind of a difficult patch and they've been doing the restructuring. But I just want to reassure that for us, Latin America and the Caribbean is increasingly going to feature on the radar scene. It's already there very strongly, but we need to actively take our nation forward. On ISTA, I'm not so much for sure. I don't deal with ISTA on a day-to-day basis with my colleague, Professor Matila. I'm not quite sure, obviously, the important summit is taking place here next week, 2017. And I'm not quite sure whether they have invited some of the African countries. But I just like to come back to what I said earlier on, that you're right, that we need to involve Latin America or South America and enhance their engagement on the African continent and vice versa. So that's why this CALSA conference that I talked about in Abuja, there were three working groups, there was the Abuja Declaration on social cooperation, so we hope that we can build on that and expand on that. I was with the Professor Fahad in Mexico recently, and it was interesting that when this idea of CASA was conceived, it was a discussion, based on discussions between President Lula and President Obrador at the time, and they then decided that this was going to be a South America Africa conference, which excluded Latin America, or let's say Latin America, the whole of Latin America, which excluded then Central America. It excluded the country, like Mexico. And when we're in Mexico, Mexico said, but we don't understand this. We're all interested in engaging with Africa. So what we are going to do in the run-up, and we'll actually discuss this in the AU context to see whether we can expand this from South America into Latin America, which would include countries like Cuba and the whole Caribbean. So that is a constructive development. But also, for us as South Africa, in our bilateral engagement with Latin America, we always put the Africa agenda on the agenda, aware that we need to have a greater involvement of Latin American business, for instance, in Nepal projects, as an example. They use companies in countries like Brazil and Argentina. Brazil is fairly active in Angola. They have quite a number of projects in Angola, but for the rest, we're not seeing a concerted drive, and so that remains a huge challenge for us. On the issue of President Chavez and his policies, when the DG was very recently, I mentioned the visit by the DG. We took the DG of Mineral Energy Affairs with him, and they had interesting discussions and frank discussions with Venezuela. From what the report that came back, was that we didn't entirely agree with everything that President Chavez was doing or is doing in the country in terms of how he is managing. But I think that there were differences on some of these issues. But I think the basic thrust of what he's trying to do, and the same with President Morales, is to return the resources of the country to the people, and that's what we in a way did in this country, in the sense that we took control of our national resources. What he's doing is to create more equity, to create more justice, to redistribute. But as I say, I don't think that we would agree with all the detail of his plan. But the fact is that if one looks at the figures, that the people in that country have benefited a lot since he took over, in terms of redistribution of wealth, in terms of health, in terms of education. There's no doubt that you might have a much fairer and a system in Venezuela now than you had before. And the same with Morales. Morales is also looking at the marginalized sections of the population, the indigenous people who were excluded in the past. So, in that sense, there's a like-mindedness in the broad and general approach to social issues in those countries. For instance, with President Morales, we have there are similarities between what President Morales is doing and President Chavez, is that we have interactions with them, not only, as I say, on constitutional issues, we also talk to them about land reform, which is a very important issue in the country, because in a similar situation in South Africa where the poor people never had part of the land. So we shared ideas with them. Now, whether they're going to implement it in the same way as we did, we don't know. We also talked to them about mineral and energy affairs. So we're engaging them on this, but as I say, we don't always agree with everything that they do. But there's a large degree of like-mindedness, which is encouraging. The question on SAFU and on the PTA, when we originally started talking a number of years ago to Mercosur, obviously realizing the opportunities that exist, they initially came to us and said, well, they would like to engage South Africa on a free trade agreement basis. We then said no, they said in keeping with our approach that we have to look at the region and the regional context. We at that stage then said let's talk to. I think as you will appreciate, for instance, recently with the EFTA negotiations and so on, it becomes increasingly difficult. I mean, it was already difficult to arrange and to make progress and because some of the outstanding issues related to the concerns of some of the smaller members of SAFU had. And those things we now address with the discussions that were concluded yesterday. Maybe if we move forward on the basis of regional integration and the processes that we are going to follow in terms of printing the RECs and so on, maybe as a step further down the road, we could look at SADC Mercosur, or even then if SADC or Mercosur, and eventually, as I said, it's not going to happen overnight. If you have a integration of the Andean community and you have with Mercosur, it's a much bigger block. Maybe we can then look at a free trade arrangement between the two, but I think this should be seen as an interim step, actually just to open up the market for us to give us an opportunity. But I think it probably would have been much more difficult, as difficult as it was, but if we did it on a Sunday basis, it probably would have been a much longer process. I agree with the principle that we move in that direction, but I think this is the first step that's going to give us a follow the foot in the door in Latin America and in America two countries. So we will continue. I will probably, as I go, when I spoke to you this morning to tell me about this, we will probably have a further discussion, and as I said, in devising a broader strategy on how we're going to take our relations forward, we will probably address these issues. So as I said, hopefully we'll have an opportunity to talk to you about
this.
Thank you very much. The only question, the last question, that is quite a difficult one. As I said, there has not been the kind of progress that one would have liked to have seen in terms of political and economic integration on the continent in the United South America. And I think you have, for instance, in Mercosur, I think I mentioned that there you had the influence of the U.S. over the years before this new wave of progressive governance took place, where there was a great degree of dependence on the U.S. and all of them. And there was also, like in South Africa or in Southern Africa, there was actually not that much inter-regional trade. There was a lot of contact, for instance, with Spain, a lot of with the EU, with U.S. And I think the challenge is that there's a lot of challenges. I think you mentioned it. You said that it's not the same challenges. It's first of all to promote regional integration, inter-regional trade in the country. And also, of course, the other complicating issue is that you have these huge economies. Yeah, you have Brazil and then Paraguay and Uruguay, which are much smaller. The economies of scale differ. There were political differences. And you still have that. I mean, there are countries who, as I mentioned, who are not particularly fond of what President Chavez is doing at the moment, who are highly critical. I mean, there are a lot of people who support him on the continent. So it's a mixture between economies of scale, the political differences that exist. And I think the past, where there was this huge dependency on countries outside, and I think there's an increasing trust now to reposition themselves to much greater integration, and President Lula is really playing a very important role in trying to take this forward. And hopefully we will see success, as I mentioned, at the recent Mercosur summit in June. They concerned the need, wish to pursue this integration process with the Andean community. In other words, which will then, that will be a step forward. But as I said, I don't think it's going to happen overnight. But there are a number of reasons for that, political, economic, the past, and as you say, I think there's some similarities to what the experience of South Africa.
Well, thank you very much, and
with
that, I think we thank you for coming over from Victoria, and probably next year we will be asking for another briefing. Yeah, thank you. You are free to go, and just to remember that you just want to take me from school, I don't know.
Thank you.
Okay, and after each input, there will be also open discussion.
Then there will be an exchange of information, and we are going to ask Science and Technology. Science and Technology is a 3% team members. We have originally asked for members from Science and Technology, from Trade and Industry, from Social Development, from Minerals and Energy, and of course us to participate. The others say they don't have funds or they're unable to for whatever reason. So actually at this point we know for sure that 3 people from Science and Technology will join us, and 7 from our committee. Or 6 from our committee. Then there will be a session on, besides the exchange of the information, there will be one on global strategic cooperation. There will be another one, people-to-people relations. There will be a further one, collaboration on special projects. And then the last will be an important session, will be the conclusion and how do we actually bring into being, or what are the steps that we need to take to actually get this dialogue forum going, the parliamentary dialogue forum going. Now, the Sisola and I have identified a certain name. We want to know if anybody is available. At this point in time, the list stands as follows. Members from this portfolio committee will be Mr. Sisole, who will be chairing the first session, and he will also participate in the will lead the discussion on the way forward. The second, and then we asked Dorothy Masibandi. She will be speaking on political considerations of the whole ISKA process. And then Mr. Ram Govind, who will take the debate on the parliamentary dimension of the ISKA dialogue, the structure, the functioning, and the monitoring aspect of the possible forum. Then we've identified for the next session is the global strategic cooperation, and the Honorable Skopana will be the South African speaker on that subject. And then the next one will be people to people relations, and the Honorable Kiki will participate in the session. I will participate in the collaboration of special projects, and then there's one other person from the opposition who will think besides Mrs. Kostana, but I see the DA person has left, Mr. Abuskasni has left. So the point is, we don't have time. We have to submit these rules, we have to submit these names like last week or week. But we couldn't do that until we had our own portfolio committee meeting. So we either, Mr. Cepularo is not here, Mr. Sibanda, I think if you're available for this meeting, of the 16th.
Probably
out.
Maybe out.
Yeah.
Okay. I'd like to suggest Mr. Bantu already, since there's so much information. Could you just push back to it?
Yeah. Okay. Let me see it, and we will ask Mr. Malamisa to be fast. So we have, and then of course.
Sorry. Tell me the plan B. Very good, and then we'll ask you to talk about it.
Okay. Can I just very quickly.
I don't know about him. I think Monday is second. I was actually ready to be a follow up order. That is a good choice.
Okay. You have a good order.
Mm-hmm. What is that? I think that's secret. 1, 2, 3. One of them will be there.
The overview will be done by myself. Financial dimension of the Eastern Dialogue Forum. I think the cultural paradigm, the structure and functioning and monitoring the functions of
financial dimension
of the Eastern Dialogue Forum. And I think what we can discuss there is the cultural structure, how it functions, and what are its monitoring objectives. So we find a whole lot of them on the funding, and each country is supposed to do that and whatever. And we as a parliament should be able to monitor whether everything is happening. That's one of the functions. But the most important thing, I think, is also that we need to hear what other parliaments are saying, because their systems are not all the same. So we'll also be hearing how such systems work and how we're going to be able to interlock and work with each other. The other one is the political consideration, and that's the message I also much about to and then the exchange of information. Now, by the theory, we need to find out who are the people that are coming from science and technology. They haven't given us names. I can't hear you when you're saying this.
It should be on your table.
Where is it? There's no difference. Anyway, there's one person from science and technology. And then on the Global Strategic Cooperation, Mrs. Cortana.
Could I suggest that in this input, the section of communication, we are also included.
Well, we talk about the position of, I mean, the broad, what you call this, name of exchange of information. Now, there are all kinds of information, whether it's scientific, economic, whatever, will fit in under there. Science and technology will need it, but all of us, and they themselves will be speaking on that, and there's a discussion after each of the inputs. Each input is 10 minutes, so there is time for discussion. There's only 30 minutes for discussion.
There's a side event.
No, there's a summit. This is our job there, what I'm talking about on the 16th. The other things, Valentina will send out the actual program of the summit. As yet, we don't know whether VFA has made available for us, enabling us to attend the rest of the summit that's on the 15th. And then the plenaries, I think at least on the 17th, we should be attending the plenaries as well. So our function mainly is on the 16th, the whole day, and then definitely, I think we need to check on that one, that you'll be allowed to attend the plenaries. On the 17th. There is the 15th is the focal point meeting. That's the academic seminar, the business seminar, the women's forum. And then evening is a gala and dinner. And then on the Tuesday morning is a foreign minister's meeting, which is a close meeting. And the academic seminar continues, the business seminar continues, the women's forum continues. And then we on the 16th have the full session, the parliamentary forum. And the side events, the joint session of academics, business, parliament, women's, share conclusions and finalize the report. So what I can gather is, see, they have to tell us whether we can actually attend the academic seminar, those who want to attend that. And those who want to attend the business seminar can do that.
15 is the one,
Monday? Monday, yeah. Our session is, yeah.
But then can I just say something then? Because I remember when we attended Vishnu.
Yeah.
In that day. We had to go to Muslim Jews.
Yeah.
One academic.
Yeah, we went to those.
Because really you cannot come in on the 16th and pray something to people when you can. Yeah, you have not been part of this Muslim Jews.
So
I suggest that we are allowed to attend from the 16th and the 17th. Yeah.
Yeah. So when we see it, then we need to get from ambassador to the, they have to accredit the delegation from the 15th to the 17th. Okay. Are there any other questions? We have I gave you the name of the delegation. So we have either the Bantu or the Nisa or the Medemotri. We would like to take everybody, the money is not there.
So the secretary will make the arrangements for that.
The secretary will make all the arrangements and keep in touch with the folks. And please, there is a research document that I have. The receiver will give that to each of the participants and the copies. There is a lot, quite a lot of information on it for the various sessions. At least it's the starting point.
So, sorry, Comrade Chair. I hear you saying that the Deputy Minister applies for this show. The three South African of the chief is driving this process. That's what I hear you saying.
No, I'm saying that it's in South Africa, so we will automatically drive it. Now, in all of these sessions, we're going to talk about political considerations. Dorothy is going to talk about that. But there must be a speaker from India on how they see the thing, how, from Brazil, how they see the thing. So every session is going to have at least what is their vision. And then we have a general open discussion. And then at the end of the whole thing, we need to pull the whole thing together and bring something concrete out on how we can take the process forward. And this whole report then has to be done, because this thing, as I say, then we'll have to go to the secret office. The process there will start of making this not this ad hoc, because this is actually an ad hoc thing to work on a more permanent thing. Is there any questions? Slovenia is a sanctioned convention center. Banisire will send out the program to everybody and a copy of the research that we've got. So there isn't much time for it. So it's only 10 minutes that is really concise and as meaningful as possible. So it's a 10-minute speech and whatever input that we're going to give the next Tuesday. Okay. Okay, then are you coming back to Cape Town then on the 17th? Okay, but you will be able to participate on the meeting of the
16th?
Yes. Definitely. Okay, so then you return on the evening of the 16th. Okay, that's fine.
Thank you.
Be able to secretary or call the